This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
British Columbia is on track to have a budget surplus of $2.25 billion this year, according to the November update of provincial finances. This is $2 billion more than estimated in February of this year. But the economic growth that Christy Clark is claiming credit for has not resulted in tangible improvements in quality of life for many families in British Columbia. Aglika Ivanova is a public interest researcher at the BC office of the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. Aglika Ivanova joins me this morning to talk about the budget surplus. Hello, Aglika.
Good morning.
Where did this surplus come from?
The surplus came from higher than expected tax revenues. About half were personal income taxes, and they're higher than what was budgeted, partly because economic growth last year was higher than we thought it would be. But the other half, a significant amount, like close to $1 billion, comes from property transfer tax. So that's from the overheated housing market, especially in Metro Vancouver, but the rest of the province as well. So all the selling and buying of real estate is generating almost $1 billion more than we projected.
What does the provincial government say they're going to do with this surplus?
The only thing the provincial government has announced yet with this surplus, which is about $2 billion more than they budgeted originally, is to use $1 billion to reduce provincial debt and another $400 million to the so-called BC Prosperity Fund, which was supposed to capture revenues from LNG development, if you recall. But those revenues have not materialized, so now the government's actually putting money in that fund so that they can say the fund exists.
That's an interesting use of money to be in a prosperity fund when money really is coming from buying and selling housing in the province.
Yeah, and the fact that buying and selling housing in the province is, and the price increases we've seen is pushing up rents and is resulting in more people being at risk of homelessness or be suffering from really severe affordability problems, with more and more of their incomes going to pay for their housing, whether it's mortgages or rent. So I think it's misguided to put money into reducing the debt or into prosperity fund when the money can be used to help British Columbians.
Well, let's take that apart a little bit. Is there a value in paying down the debt at this point in time?
I would argue there is very little value in paying down the debt at this time. It's basically silly to do that because we are in a time with record low interest rates. So the interest we're paying on the debt has never been as low. It's the best time to borrow and invest in things like infrastructure, things like rapid transit or social housing or anything else that we know we need to build over the next decade. And we need to borrow in order to build that. So now is the best time to do so instead of paying down the debt, because the benefit of paying down the debt really is the interest payments you save, and those are minimal. We have very, very reasonable debt-to-GDP ratio, which means that we can afford to carry the debt. The interest is as low as it has ever been, and we have a number of social and economic problems in this province that we could be addressing. So I think it's irresponsible to put money into paying down the debt at this point when children are going to bed hungry. And when we have schools where special needs children don't get the support they need to learn, when we have seniors struggling to get home support and ending up in hospital, we have so many serious problems in this province that we should be addressing instead.
Now, you make an excellent analogy in your recent article in the CCPA's policy note, where you say that we wouldn't celebrate the financial management skills of parents who end the month with money in the bank by sending their kids to bed hungry. Talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is what the government is essentially doing. I mean, think about what does it mean to be so-called prudent or not spend money on different programs and services and end up with a big surplus when food bank use is on the rise. Even though economic growth last year has been strong, and in fact it's been strong for the last couple of years, food bank use is up every year, so by something like 3%. So we're seeing a very large number of British Columbians who are not at all seeing benefits from that economic growth. And we have child poverty. We know that one in five children is still living in poverty in BC. We know that our schools are underfunded. We know that people are struggling to afford housing, and the number of homeless people is going up. So those are all big problems that we are neglecting and sweeping under the carpet while bragging about having a budget surplus or paying down the debt. It is the same as in a family, sending the children to bed hungry and then celebrating the fact that you had some money left over.
It's especially shocking when surplus is generated in large part from the overheated housing market, which is just causing so many problems for people in the Lower Mainland.
Absolutely, and that's one of the reasons actually economic growth was higher than expected, because a lot of the growth and the economic activity that we've seen in this province has come from the housing market, the real estate sector, you know, both developers and then the activities around building new housing. In fact, if you look at the numbers of where the economic growth came from last year, we see about one-third of GDP growth is from the real estate sector alone. So that is a big problem because, as you mentioned, it is causing social problems, it is causing housing unaffordability and putting people at the risk of homelessness. But it's also a problem because if the government attempts to do something about it, if, you know, the foreign buyer tax and increases in investment in social housing, if those are able to reduce prices and put a bit of a break on the housing market, then what is going to drive economic growth, right? We don't have any other drivers. There's no LNG. The government doesn't really have a plan for a diversified and sustainable economic growth. So I think they're really scared. And I think that's why you saw yesterday or on Thursday the new announcement of a home buyer's loan in order to actually boost the market a little bit.
Every fall, Iglika, BC conducts a month-long budget consultation process, and then a bipartisan committee prepares a report. What are some of the elements of that report this year?
This year, I mean, we see a really solid list of policy recommendations that would make British Columbia a very different place. I mean, we're talking about a budget consultation report that is reflecting what people across BC need to see. So we're looking at priorities that don't just come from a single person or a group. They come from British Columbians in general. And the priority list is something that I would love to see, starting from childcare, investing in accessible and high-quality childcare plans, to poverty reduction, a comprehensive poverty reduction strategy, adequate funding for education at all levels from K to 12, adult basic education, so high school equivalency courses for adults, investment in healthcare, housing affordability. So we're looking at a report that outlines an agenda for BC that if the government listened to its own budget consultation, it would really help British Columbians benefit from the economic growth that we have seen and generate more sustainable, inclusive, and diversified economy, essentially, by investing in childcare, by reducing poverty by improving access to social housing.
Now, if you're talking to your neighbors like I do, we know that these are the things that people talk about that they want. Yet we know none of these things, poverty reduction, increased funding to education, they haven't happened. So what's going on here? Why do you think the government has a committee and a consultation process if it doesn't listen to it?
That's a good question, and I ask myself that quite frequently as well. A lot of these recommendations people have put forward for a number of years now, and the committee, which is made up of MLAs from both the Liberal Party and the NDP, unanimously voted on them. And for the last 4 years, they've unanimously voted to recommend to the provincial government to invest in childcare, to invest in poverty reduction, to invest in education. So it is amazing that we've seen our provincial government dig their heels in and say, we can't afford these things. Because usually that is the excuse that we've been using. We can't afford it. We need to be good fiscal managers. And we turn back to the surplus rate, the argument that reducing poverty or helping people in need or improving education is something that is a luxury that we can only afford once we pay down all the debt. That is misguided. I think it's very important to remember that the kind of policies that we're talking about, like investment in childcare or in proper housing or quality, properly funded education, those things are not luxuries. They are fundamental for building a strong economy going forward. And we're shooting ourselves in the foot by ignoring these investments in order to show a budget surplus on the book.
What'll it take to convince the government to start spending money on things that its citizens say are a priority?
I wish I had the answer to that. I think we all want to know. I just think that it's long overdue for this government to actually listen to what the people want and look at the real situation of where people are at. So instead of looking at the top level indicators and saying, economic growth was strong, therefore everything is good, actually looking at how it translates to quality of life for people and how many people are really struggling, how many people are living paycheck to paycheck and cannot afford to remain in Metro Vancouver, for example. We're seeing lots of young families with children having to move to other parts of the province because they can't afford the housing costs here. So I think we need to start getting serious about these. I honestly don't know what it's going to take, but we need to continue to talk about it and put pressure on them to do so.
Well, I appreciate your taking the time this morning and really helping clarify and take apart this whole issue for us.
Thanks for having me on the show.
I've been speaking with Iglika Ivanova, public interest researcher at the BC Office of the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives.